GRCast, the flagship podcast for GamesReviews.com. I'm Joe Ryan, your host, and today it's just me and Allison Hill.
Hello.
So we have some stuff to talk about. I think we're going to start off talking about games, as we are known to do. But then the big news at this point, I think, is the Microsoft news about how they've basically completely reversed their policies on DRM and the daily internet connection check. So we will both weigh in on that and probably make fun of Matt for a while.
Yes, he can't defend himself.
That's the best time to do it. Well, why don't you kick it off then and tell me what you've been playing? I'm interested to hear.
Actually, not much, because last week I was in Texas to visit family. But Matt gave me a free copy of Rush Brothers, which is an indie platformer on Steam. And I wasn't terribly impressed. It's supposed to be kind of like a rhythm, like music game, kind of, because it takes the music that's playing and all like some platforms and traps will go with the beat of the music as you're going through. But it didn't really seem like it was hard to tell that was happening. You know, it wasn't that obvious. And you can change the music and you can even enter your own music. And but I still didn't really see that much of a difference. So I was a little disappointed on that. And it's also it's very heavy on like racing. Like you can do split screen or you can race against other people on Steam. And so the point is to race as fast as possible and get to the levels as fast as possible. But overall I was pretty unimpressed. I prefer the controls to be a little bit tighter. The level design could have been better. It's very colorful. It's very bright. The music is very techno, club-like, you know, beats and such, and it fits well with the game. But I don't know. I just prefer other platformers, I guess.
So is it a rhythm-type game where the rhythm doesn't seem to matter? Because that seems like it doesn't make any sense or a huge mistake being made.
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the hooks for the game, was that, you know, oh man, the music affects the level, and it didn't seem, I mean, you can sort of tell, but you'd have to really pay attention. It doesn't really seem as obvious, and it's not like you can use, like, I didn't feel like there was any real opportunity to, like, use the beat of music to try to time my jumps and stuff. I don't know, it didn't seem like, if the game didn't tell me it was there, I would have never known, basically.
Yeah, that seems like they may have dropped the ball there. I will probably be not playing this game. I can say that with certainty. I have too many games that I really want to play a game about rhythm where the rhythm doesn't matter.
Yeah, I mean, it's really unfortunate because the game looks, it's like very sharp and good art and everything, and it just looks like they needed more time or possibly more money. You never know, you know, indies and such.
Right. If you want to play a good game where you load your music in and that gives you something to do, then I recommend Audio Surf. That game is years and years old, but when I played it ages ago, it was great.
Is it a fan game?
I think you. Where can you download Audio Surf? I'm sure you can get it on Steam, and it's like I don't know how to describe it. It would be like playing Rock Band just with a mouse or something, or like maybe a keyboard where you have a little thing that's racing down these lanes, and there's like different colorful things you have to hit, and the track is like going up like a roller coaster when the music is building, and then it goes down super fast when the music speeds up. You really got to play it to get it, I think, or look up a video. But Audio Surf, try it.
It already sounds more interesting than Rush Bros, so I might have to give that a try.
Yeah, it's definitely worth it. I would download it. This week on Super Old Games Cast, Audio Surf, everyone's favorite. I'd actually love to load the new Daft Punk album into Audio Surf. That might be great.
There you go.
Anyway, what else have you been playing?
I've actually been playing this game called Cry of Fear. It's also another indie game on Steam, and I'm going to be writing a review on it soon for the site. It's a horror game. It's first person, and it's a little survivor horror-ish. It's not, you know, you don't get a whole ton of ammo, but you know, there's not a lot of resources to like pick up. It's just basically you can have a melee weapon, and there's a, like, you start, you know, you don't start off with any guns at all, and then you find a handgun and you kind of work your way up from there. But it's very it actually reminds me a lot of Silent Hill. Things kind of happen that aren't, you know, that is sort of supernatural and not realistic, and which is a good thing. Like you're going down a hallway and all of a sudden like it freaked the hell out of me. I'm walking down a hallway and all of a sudden the game kind of flashes this like bloody figure in front of me for like a second, and then I'm like, I don't want to continue down this hallway anymore. And then I get to the end of the hallway and the door is locked, so I turn around and the wall is broken through all of a sudden. Like, oh, I can go this way now, and just everything just kind of like the world's like like suddenly changes sometimes. So it's almost like in Silent Hill where you had normal world and then you had like the hell version. It kind of does that a little bit. So that's where I find the similarities between Cry of Fear and Silent Hill, which I think is good. But the enemies are they're scary when you first encounter them, but you know, as you encounter them more often, you know, they're not really, the scare factor is less and less, but I mean, I get scared pretty easily, so I don't know how scary this would be for others, but I am thoroughly enjoying the game. I got down to the first boss, and I also greatly enjoyed that it wasn't just shoot the boss until he dies. You actually had to figure out, you know, there was a certain weak spot that he had to get to, and you could only get to it if you get him to fall down on his knees, and so there was almost like a puzzle aspect there. And and as you know, puzzles are my thing. So anything with puzzle aspects is great. So yeah, check it out, Cry of Fear. I really enjoy it.
Where can I acquire this? Is this a Steam thing? Did you say?
Yes, in fact, you know, I'm gonna double check right now, but I believe it's free.
You are playing my tune right now. I like to imagine, this is why I love having you on, Allison, because I like to imagine that before a show, like a week before, you sit down and say, okay, I have to bring Joe either some sort of artsy game or a horror game to, like, appease him, and you rarely disappoint me with something like that. Nobody else plays these art games or horror games. I always feel like I'm the only one.
Yeah, well, I guess, I mean, I'm not particularly thinking about you when I play these games, but I'm happy to provide you with entertainment.
If my face flashed up in the middle of a game, it would scare the shit out of people. So I feel like if I could just get my face into their minds when they're playing horror games, it would be far scarier for most.
Yep, it is completely free.
Oh, I know what I will be doing immediately following the show. It's downloading that game. Awesome. Ooh. Now you've got me excited for something. That happens so rarely, it seems like. Speaking of a boss where there's a puzzle to, instead of just shooting him 100 times, people who haven't listened to last week's GR cast, which, Allison, you certainly haven't because it just came out this morning, when I talked about a few of my disappointments with The Last of Us, I mentioned the fact that there is a boss who comes out, and I died 30 times trying to figure out the puzzle to beat him, and then it turned out that you just had to shoot him 100 times with a shotgun, and that was it. He was just a bullet sponge, and I expected more.
That's unfortunate. I'm actually looking at the Steam page for Cry of Fear, and there's actually a few things on here that I didn't even know. First of all, for a free game, this is incredible. A single-player game is like 8 hours. Like,
that seems kind of amazing for, yeah, especially for a game that's free. Is it just free right now because of some sort of promotion?
And you know what? I'm not sure. I picked up the game like at least 2 weeks ago. So it also has a co-op campaign with up to 4 players, which I didn't even know about.
This is killing me. This is awesome. I should not be on Steam while I'm trying to record a podcast that I'm paid for. I'm supposed to be a professional, but I am right now looking it up.
Yeah, I mean, the visuals aren't, obviously, they're not like current gen or anything because it's an indie game. So, once they're playing for a while, you know, the graphics don't really matter much anymore. In terms of story, but there isn't really much story yet. So I'm not sure where it's going to go with story. It's just, like, you know, just survive. Shit happens. Oh, my God. you're just like walking on the street and all of a sudden like you get like knocked out and then you wake up somewhere else and that's how the game starts. So it's like I don't even know.
Awesome. Well, I guess hopefully it'll still be free by the time this show goes out. If not, I guess everyone who's listening missed out through no fault of their own.
Yeah.
What else? What else you got? I know you've got to have more than that.
I mean, I played more Save Decay. I'm sure we've talked a lot about that in this podcast already.
How are you finding it?
I
Like, how long have you played that at this point? Does that game have an end? Like, I don't even know if it has a story or if you just go crazy for a while or, I mean, what happens? Can you beat it?
it seems that way. It kind of like you can sort of tell which missions that you get are like storyline based. Because you can't progress. Like for instance, like with one of your first main stories is you have to go to the pharmacy to get medicine for your friend. And besides all the random missions that come up that are optional, nothing else new will come up until you do that one first. So like so that they're a little bit obvious, but and now I just went to the courthouse because if you join the community there, they have all these laws. You have to turn in all your guns. You have to, any food you find, you have to turn in, and then they have to ration it out. And it seems kind of like, it seems like the person in charge, she has like a, is going on a power trip kind of a thing. And you're like, this is not good. I'm not going to join your community. I'm getting out of here. And so I don't know if there's going to be more story developing with that. But, and then I just met this new character who provides me cars, which is awesome. So, but I actually am not, I'm not entirely sure like how the story will, if there's an end or what.
I know, I don't know if you had seen the news, but they announced either yesterday or maybe the day before that I don't, probably because they have sold so many copies, State of Decay is the fastest selling Xbox Live game of all time. They sold 500,000 copies in under 2 weeks, I believe it was. So they announced that they're adding, just for free, a sandbox mode that you will be able to load into at some point where there aren't any like stupid missions or things like that. If you like just want to like loot things and survive and build your community, that'll be something you're able to do forever.
That's awesome. Like, in terms of, I looked up the developer a little bit more, like after I had already bought the game. It turns out that this game is actually like a precursor to the game they really want to make. Like, they want to make a more MMO style game, like, a proper full release title. But they made this game because to build, well, obviously they needed money to make the big game. They built a smaller game with some of the ideas they have for the big game and kind of test out the waters and stuff. And I'm like, this game is already really fantastic, and you're going to make a bigger game? I'm so excited.
Yeah, I'd heard about that too, and I, in a way, I wonder when they say MMO what they mean necessarily, because I would almost prefer if it was more like Borderlands or something where you could just load in with a handful of people and play it. Because pretty much every time people can take a great idea, and as soon as they turn it into an MMO, it's like you're in a world where almost everyone is dead, and then you load in, and there are 400 people standing there. Some guy named like Dick Trickles is dancing shirtless on a mailbox. Like another person's just standing in line firing into the air. There's 800 people in line to get a quest where they're all like spawning in the same zombie killing truck with a shovel on the front or whatever, driving around, smashing through things. Ugh.
Yeah, I mean, maybe they'll do something where they'll have several different servers and only a certain number of people allowed on one server. I really don't know how they're going to do that. I kind of felt like as I was playing, it would be nice to have even just at least a co-op, have someone, anybody drop in, drop out, help you out with your game and stuff. It obviously doesn't have that, but I don't know what they're going to do. Well, I guess we'll just have to wait and see. Also, I just checked on Raptor. I have logged in 26 hours so far.
Nice. I would love to be able to play that game where other people's like survivor community existed and I could just go raid them and kill their people and steal their stuff while they weren't even playing, and then they would just come back to find like a picture of me pasted on the wall and dead bodies of all their friends laying around and all their stuff missing.
That's actually really interesting. Maybe they'll put that in. if they listen to this podcast, which they probably don't.
Hey, I think we've got some potential developer fans out there. I understand that the guys at Sandswept with the Dead Linger are at least somewhat interested.
Well, good. Well, why don't you tell me more about this lingering thing?
Yeah, I talked a bit about it on the last one. It's basically a sort of first-person zombie survival game. It's still in alpha. You just load into the game with, like, nothing, and you're in a procedurally generated world that I understand can generate up to 64,000 kilometers. So you will find it impossible to ever see everything or whatever. And then you basically just start walking around and trying to survive. It's similar to State of Decay if you played State of Decay before all the mechanics were quite added. Like, right now, there's just you. There's, like, a bunch of zombies that are just basically, like, placeholder zombies or whatever, and there's a lot of weird issues because it's an alpha, but, I mean, you just basically go into houses and try to find, like, guns, or you try to find food because you have to keep, you know, eating or you're going to starve to death. But they recently added the ability to, if you find a hammer and some, like, boards, you can pick up the boards, rotate them around, and then if you hold them on any surface and do a melee attack with the hammer, it nails the board on. So people can now start building, like, plywood structures or barricading houses to keep zombies out, and it's really shaping up to be something pretty awesome.
That's really neat. You know, like, in State of Decay, you just go up to a window and he automatically just, you know, you hold the button and he barricades it. But the fact that you can actually put the board in a specific place, like, just how you want it, and I can already imagine people building crazy, weird things with them.
Yeah, also if you find an axe, you can cut down a tree, and that promptly turns into a bunch of long boards and big flat pieces of wood that you can then use to build, like, you could just build a structure out in the woods, you could build, like, a tower, I saw one guy who built, like, a spiral ramp up to the top of a tree, and then he had a platform on top of the tree that he was living on. So, there's a lot of cool stuff going on in that game.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff about it. I talked a lot about it on the last podcast, but I'll talk again about it because it impressed me so much that there were things I did in that game that just came naturally to me. Like, the example I used last time was I was running from zombies. I ran into a house, and they were going to come in the door behind me. I shut the door, but they can batter it down or open it or something. So I just grabbed, like, a couch or a chair, and I moved it in front of the door, and then they couldn't get it open. And it wasn't until after I had done that that I thought about the fact that the game had let me move a couch or a chair in front of the door. It was just like an instinct. I wanted to do it, and I did it. And it worked. That's the amazing thing to me.
Yeah, that's awesome. You know, usually in a game it's like you come across something that you just want to do, and then you can't do it, and then you get frustrated. But yeah, this sounds really, really good.
Yeah, I think you will be trying it out. I'll be interested to hear your and Matt's opinions of that game as well.
You know, when you said that you did something that came naturally to you, I was half expecting you to say that you threw a Molotov cocktail at your feet.
That does come natural. I don't think I've found a Molotov in that game yet, though I know they exist. Actually, I think you can make them. I don't even know how to make things in that game yet, but maybe there's a whole layer I'm missing out on. Believe me, the first one that touches my palm will also touch the floor beneath my feet. I can promise you that.
What else have you been playing?
A lot of The Last of Us, which in the last podcast I outlined sort of my problems with it. And it has problems. It's not the most amazing game I've ever played, as some people have been saying. But I have played for another handful of hours. I am at like 70% now, and the game has ramped up significantly. It went from the opening of that game, like the first 20 minutes or so, is like amazing. And then it gets into the first act proper, and the entire first act I found underwhelming, to say the least. And there's a lot of people in their reviews, they mention it. They say that the first act or whatever is very difficult. And that is true, but I didn't necessarily find it to be difficult in a way where it was like, okay, I just have to learn this game, or I'm not used to the mechanics or whatever. It was just hard in a way that was stupid and not fun. Like, I would get to an area, and it would be more open, like not as linear as Uncharted, because they wanted me to sneak around or whatever. They wanted to give me options, but because of that slight amount of openness, it made it unclear where the hell I was supposed to be going. So then I would just wander around in that area for days, trying to figure out where it was they wanted me to go. And then I would alert the stupid monsters, and then they would all charge at me like 800 at a time and kill me in 1 second. So that can be frustrating. Like I said last time, as the game goes on, you get into fighting more human enemies, which is where that game really shines, because they will try to coordinate against you in some ways, and you can start messing with their heads, like, you know, throwing a distraction item, or maybe you pop up and shoot at one of them, take one guy out, and then he tells his friends, hey, he's over there, and in the meantime, you've snuck away from that point, so now they're all, like, looking where you were, trying to go and attack a spot that you don't exist anymore, while you're setting up to choke somebody out, or, like, tossing a bomb behind one of them so that when he steps backwards, he's going to set it off and kill him and his friends or whatever. It's quite good. And the farther I've played it, the more I've found it immersive. Like people were saying, the immersion is broken less often by silly little things. I don't know. For some reason, it's almost like the first act wasn't quite glued together as well as the rest of the game is.
That's interesting. I do like the sound of the human AI sounds very impressive.
Yeah, it's a lot. I told Matt yesterday that I've sort of started to think of it as when you see humans, it means you want to stealth around. Their AI works in such a way that you want to mess with their heads. You want to like be Batman or whatever, freak them out a little bit, and then get behind them and do your thing or whatever, take them out silently. And it almost seems like whenever the monster zombie guys show up, that's sort of your cue to get the guns out and just get ready to fight them. Because there have been times where there was a point yesterday where I set off this like noise trap and it caused 1,000 zombies to run at me. And my instinct in that game is just to get away from them rather than waste my bullets, because you don't carry that many. Scarcity is kind of the whole point of the survival thing. And they just mercilessly beat me to death in seconds. So then it reloaded the autosave, which was after I had set off the noise trap, but the zombies were not alerted.
Oh, no.
But they weren't alerted, which is a strange thing. So then I thought, okay, well, this works out. So now I can sneak past them. But I must have tried it 30 different ways. And there are so many creatures over there that they would catch you every time. No matter how you tried to distract them, no matter how you tried to sneak or whatever, it was like they wanted them to come charging at you and you were just supposed to fight them, but I wasn't getting that because I thought I could sneak past them now. So finally, I just got annoyed and I was like, that's it, you bastards. I just pulled out the shotgun. I like walked over there and blasted the first one in the face, and then they all charged me and I, you know, took them out one by one as best I could. And when I killed them all, then it was like somebody said, oh, now we can go this way or whatever. So I don't know if I ever could have snuck by them at all. They just wanted me to kill them. Somebody who walks through that door and sets off the trap and reacts in a smart way and just shoots them all to death will never have the problem that I had. So the problem is that I'm an idiot. But yeah, so pretty much now, whenever I see, like, zombie creatures, I just pull my gun out. I barely try. Unless there's one or two of them, I don't even try sneaking. That, to me, is sort of the game's cue that we're going to do some shooting now, and this is going to be, like, an action section, which I guess I'm okay with. I will say that that game makes me make use of my secondary items more than any other game, because I will have, like, I think I can carry, like, 15 revolver bullets, and that's it. That's all the revolver bullets I get. I have, like, another pistol and a shotgun, but you can't carry that much ammo. So, for the first time, and the way I've started to find more fun in this game, I'm actually switching to, like, my Molotovs or my little, you can make these bombs that are basically a tin can full of, scissors, so that when it explodes, it throws a bunch of blades everywhere. I'm using that stuff all the time when there's crowds of crazy monsters and everything. And in like a regular shooter game or Uncharted, I never even think to throw a grenade because I have 10,000 bullets. I just keep shooting until everyone's dead. So in that way, it forces me to think a little bit more about it. And I'm coming around to it. I'm actually liking it more for that. I just have to sort of change my mindset and not necessarily do what immediately comes natural to me, which is hold the button, spray, and pray until I pass the checkpoint or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, I do find that in a lot of games where, you know, bullets aren't a problem, you tend to forget that you have a secondary option such as a grenade or Molotovs and such. So that sounds really awesome. I cannot wait to get this game.
If you go in with the right attitude, I think you will enjoy it a lot. I told them in the last episode that they talked a lot, I felt like, about how when you killed people, it was going to be sort of a rare thing, and that the people you were killing were just going to be other humans who were just trying to survive, and you would feel bad about it. And that is patently false. It's not true. There has never been another person who was like, just a guy surviving, and I felt bad about killing him. Everyone you have to fight is like a post-apocalypse gangster who hunts humans for fun or whatever. You'll never feel bad about killing somebody in this game. And I think
Cool.
Marcus was a little disappointed because the whole idea of killing people being kind of scarce or whatever, they sort of disproved that in the first like 20 minutes of Act One when I had gone to meet a guy and like killed 30 of his men on the way. So. It's not really like you're not going to encounter a lot of people. You will kill a very large amount of human beings, and I suspect you will feel nothing the entire time you play in this game. There could be a point. Like I said, I'm 70% of the way through. There could be a point where you start meeting people where you're going to feel bad about it, but that has not occurred yet for me.
Well, that sounds interesting.
I know Matt had said he's looking forward to getting it, but he is going to just try and like rent it and slam it out in 24 hours. But Matt, if you're listening, and if anyone else is listening, don't do that, because if you're trying to slam this out as fast as possible, you're going to miss out on some of the parts that are my favorite bits so far. It's the stuff that's happening when you're not necessarily fighting that's really good. Like, there was a part where we were going through some sort of like destitute suburb area, and the girl found like a dartboard, and she just started chatting about something and practicing playing darts and stuff. And just the little conversations they have and the way they interact with things is really pretty cool. And I feel like the characterization has gotten much better. There's not a lot of story stuff in the first act either, which is probably another reason I didn't really think the first act was all that great. But yeah, it has continued to ramp up and up since the first act ended, and I get the feeling I will think of it as one of the sort of top games by the time I'm done with it. It's just that the first act doesn't make a great impression, in my opinion.
Yeah, well, I cannot wait to get my hands on this game. It's gonna be good.
Yeah, I'm sure we will plan to do a special episode about it, similar to what we did with BioShock Infinite, in like a few weeks or something down the line when everybody's had a chance to play it. And then we will find out if everybody thinks it warranted all of the tens and stuff that it got, or if maybe people were just getting a little wrapped up in the new game hype or whatever. But yeah, that should be interesting. That's really all I've been playing, except for Torchlight. I want to mention that Torchlight is free on Good Old Games, which is GOG.com. So if you haven't played Torchlight, I played it for like 2 hours this morning. I finally have a computer that can run Torchlight, which tells you how great my computers have been. It's really good. It's sort of Diablo 2 clone or whatever, but better than Diablo 2. And I think that everyone says Torchlight 2 is better than Diablo 3. So go pick up Torchlight for free. You will not be going wrong with that.
Yeah, I've heard the same thing. Do you know how much longer it's gonna be free for? I think it's isn't it a limited time?
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure. I know that their current sale lasts until July 5th, but Torchlight for free might not last that long, so I would do it at your earliest convenience. All right, well, I think that is it for games, so now we should probably talk about the big news out of Microsoft, the fact that the Xbox One has decided to do away with all of the DRM policies and online check-ins that I thought were sort of crucial to the functioning of that system. How do you feel about that?
Yes, the Xbox 180, as everybody is now referring to. I'm very surprised that Microsoft did a complete 180. I expected, especially after Sony kind of bitch slapped him in the face, that they were going to do something to try to make peace with the consumers. But for them to completely flip-flop like everything, I was very surprised at. I thought they were going to really pushed the whole DRM thing, and I'm happy, I guess. I mean, I'm still not planning on buying an Xbox One, so it's not as, it doesn't really affect me as much, but I'm definitely happy with more so with the whole internet connection, because I really, I mean, my internet connection is fine, but I feel bad for everyone who either doesn't have a good connection or doesn't have a connection at all, like in other countries, and especially like in the military. I remember reading this one officer's blog post or something about it, and he was upset and stuff, and I just felt really bad. So I'm really glad that that's no longer a problem.
It's kind of crazy to me. Here's my question for you is I have read that all those policies are gone, but to get rid of them, it will require a day one patch that you'll have to, like, as soon as you start up your system, you'll download that patch, and then the Xbox One will basically be the Xbox 360, but better graphics or whatever. Do you think that they purposely built in the option to later patch all that stuff out just in case everyone was super pissed? Like, or do you think it was just a software thing that was running that was going to be easy for them to change if they wanted to in the first place? I thought it sounded so ingrained that it would not be easy for them to just change it that with just like a patch like that.
Yeah, that's a good point. I never actually thought about it that way. But I mean, I don't know if I would say that they did that, on purpose just in case they were going to get rid of it all. Maybe more so because, they expected that maybe they were going to have to make changes. I don't know if Microsoft ever expected to actually get rid of everything like just like that. But I think a more realistic thought is that they might have needed to make changes, or they needed access to it to patch it, but not to get rid of it, but for other reasons. I don't, I mean, I really don't know, but
Yeah, it's hard to say. What do you think that they decided to change this policy because of the backlash on the internet? Because Microsoft has sort of built a reputation based on backlash from the internet. Almost every version of Windows that comes out, everyone hates it, but they stick to their guns, and in the end, people realize it's either not that bad or they were right, it's better, we just had to get used to it or whatever. So that's kind of why it surprised me. Do you really think that it is the people complaining that did it, or do you think they were really hoping that Sony was going to do the same thing so that it wouldn't matter? I mean, what do you think was the main thing that prompted the switch?
I mean, when they announced it in the write-up, they specifically pointed out that it was, we listened to your feedback, we appreciate your honesty, and this is the reason why we're changing things. But I do imagine that it also has something to do with the PS4, because, I mean, you're right. Like, what if the PS4 did the same thing? Do you think Microsoft would get rid of it? Like, if, it would, if PS4 did the same thing, it would kind of level the playing field. Everybody would be upset with both systems. But, like, since the PS4 wasn't, and it seemed like everyone was saying, well, never mind the Xbox One, I'm not buying one. It really like hurt their sales. At least they probably saw that it was going to hurt their sales a lot if they kept it. So I'm tending to believe that, it was part, obviously it was partially because of the backlash and, people saying they weren't going to buy one, but also because I think it's mainly because Sony didn't do it. Because if Sony did do it and they both stuck to their guns, well then it's an even playing field, and people really, it didn't matter which one you bought. You know what I mean?
Right, yeah, I don't think anybody would be reversing their policy if Sony had announced it too. And there were a lot of like rumors beforehand and stuff saying that Sony was gonna do something like that. It was almost a surprise when they said they weren't gonna do something like that. So maybe that was part of it too. They just thought, okay, well, they're doing it, we're doing it, people are gonna have to deal with it. To be honest, Matt and I sort of agree. Even though Matt is like the world's biggest Microsoft lover now or whatever, he's totally on board for Microsoft now that everyone hates them. It's weird to me that they switched, and I wonder if it wasn't a bad idea because people seem happy about it, but in the end, maybe there would have been a rocky start, but I don't believe it would have affected sales that much. I think gamers are the type of people who get on the internet and complain, and then when the time comes, they buy it anyway. As someone mentioned, it's similar to the way when 360 came out, or maybe it was even just the Xbox One, when the live service was launched, it was broadband only, and everyone was furious about it, but Microsoft stuck to it, and I would bet that Xbox Live probably sold more Comcast subscriptions or whatever than lame cable TV did, and in that way, Microsoft sort of dragged people kicking and screaming into the future, and it seemed like that's what they were going to do again. And then they decided, no, we're not going to do that now. It's a little frustrating because there were cool ideas attached to it, like the family sharing and stuff that we're losing now. But like I said, I wouldn't have been able to make use of most of this because my internet connection's so terrible anyway. You never know if it's going to be working one day and not the next. So, but again, I don't have the money to buy both, and I might not have the money to buy one, and it didn't matter what the policy was. I was always going to end up buying a PS4 first. I guess I'm just a Sony person. Largely because in the span of the time that the 360 has existed, it went from my favorite video game console, maybe of all time, when it first came out. It had those blades. I thought everything was a really compact experience, and they've slowly sort of evolved it or devolved it to the point where it is just a PC that you use a controller with, where they try to sell you everything like movies and music, but you can't do any of the other good stuff you want to do on a computer. It takes me like 14 clicks to find a game I want to play on what is supposed to be a game console. So, I don't know. They've slowly made it, in my opinion, worse and worse. And I would bet that the Xbox One is going to sort of continue that trend of being like your all-in-one media box, but I already have an all-in-one media box. It's called my computer, and it runs iTunes, because I'm a Mac nerd, I guess.
TV, TV, TV. Experience. TV.
I don't know how to feel about this.
I often wonder, like, you know, maybe you're right. Like, maybe this wasn't going to be such a bad thing. But maybe I almost feel like it just wasn't the right time. Like, maybe down the line when internet, like, connections and such are, you know, much more worldwide and, you know, stable and just, like, everyone's connected all the time, maybe that will be a better time for it. 'Cause, you know, one of my main concerns with the whole sales, you know, reselling of games, like, I usually don't buy used games, so that's not really a problem for me because I prefer to support the developers and stuff. But, you know, I was concerned with just giving my friend a game. You know, it's like I kind of want to, you know, like it's taking away that kind of ownership feeling. Like I don't actually own this piece of, you know, physical thing that I just bought. But then they had that family sharing thing, which seemed to, you know, that would probably help with that problem or solve it. But yeah, it's just enough people didn't have enough internet connection. And of course, like you said, gamers like to complain on the internet. I also often wonder if because the whole deal with the NSA leaks and Big Brother watching you and the fact that it has to have internet connection every 24 hours and the Kinect is connected all the time, I found a couple people like getting really panicky about that aspect as well. And I kind of wonder if that also sparked an outrage on the internet, but I'm not really sure. I haven't really looked that carefully.
I actually mentioned something about that in a previous show where there's a program that store owners can use to set up a Kinect for people where it tracks people when they come in and it like judges them based on whether they're a man or a woman, how big they are, like what kind of stuff they're looking at, and then it just suggests, here's what this customer might like. Like, you just walk up to a screen, and it automatically, I mean, this is a program that's already running, apparently, at some stores and stuff. The camera's just been watching you the entire time you've been in the store, and then you walk up to the screen, and it's like, based on what you look like and what you're wearing and the stuff you looked at in the store, here's other stuff you might think of, or whatever. And I told Matt that there was
Wow.
a possibility that the Xbox One could be, since their camera's always on, it might hear your conversations about, like, I'm really looking forward to Call of Duty, and then it would play a Call of Duty ad, where otherwise it would have played an Old Spice ad, or maybe it sees that there's, two women in the room, so it plays a KitchenAid commercial or something really sexist, like Microsoft would probably do. But I don't know. That's probably getting a little tinfoil hat, maybe.
Yeah, I thought I heard something, maybe it was just a rumor, that you actually could turn the Kinect off, but at least just the camera aspect. But maybe I'm wrong, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I thought they had said that it was only the microphone version that was going to be always active or something, and it'll be always active even when the system is off, because you need to be able to tell it to turn on, which is a function that I don't really know needs to
Oh, okay.
exist. But I guess if you really want to, I feel like
Yeah,
an
but it is
idiot when
kind
I'm talking to my devices. Like, I have a bunch of Apple products, and I can't use that Siri thing because I feel like a fool talking to a piece of nothing.
it's kind of like one of those things, like, remember when cell phones first came out? Anybody who had a cell phone, they were like, oh, look at that pompous asshole has a cell phone, walking down the street talking to people. Or when the iPad first came out and people had them in public, they're like, ooh, look at me. I feel like that maybe the whole talking to devices thing is kind of like that. Like, maybe not, you don't, it, maybe it's not that you look pompous, but it just seems silly. But I can totally see in the future being like, everybody does it all the time and no one's going to think twice about it. And our kids are going to be like, wait, you couldn't talk to your devices before? Like, what are you talking about? It's crazy.
I'm sure that'll be the case. They had just announced at some recent event that Apple is going to start having iOS with Siri in vehicles. Like, there are going to be cars that just come with a little touchscreen and iOS built in. So as you're driving down the street, you can just tell your car to send text messages or find a phone number you need or call for pizza or whatever, or like find the route you need. Which, in a way, is kind of exciting. I like the idea of it in the car so that idiots don't take their hands and their eyes off of where they're meant to be while you're driving down the street.
Yeah, that's a plus.
But anyway, it'll be interesting to see how people react to the Microsoft news. There's a lot of people who think it's great, and then there are an equal number of people who didn't mind because they're always connected to the internet with everything anyway, and they wanted some of the cool features that were being offered. My problem is, if I read an article that's against Microsoft, and I think that guy made some good points, I'm with him. And then I read somebody else who has the opposite opinion, and I think, no, wait, he had good points. Now I'm on his team. It's like I'm just on the team of whoever last wrote something semi-intelligent. I can't form an opinion on this of my own. I guess it because it doesn't affect me. I'm not getting an Xbox anytime near launch, or probably within the next couple of years. So by then, they'll have sorted something out. I can't believe they changed their minds, though. That is the takeaway for me.
Yeah, same here. I'm just because Microsoft has always been a stick to your guns kind of company. So, and you were saying before that now Matt is very angry about all of this.
Yeah, I think it's sort of frustrated with the type of person who's willing to get on the internet and bitch about everything when in the end they were always just going to buy it anyway, which was 90% of these people. I mean, let's be honest. The crowd who did this are the same crowd that cried about the end of Mass Effect, and they consider themselves to have won against BioWare because they added stuff to the ending of that. How many things now is the internet going to get up in arms about now that they've won two big battles? It's like everything in our lives is going to be controlled by the people who are screaming the loudest on the internet. That makes me miserable.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you there. It's like, I was one of the people when they announced all this stuff that I said, yeah, because of this, I'm not going to buy an Xbox One. But yeah, I wasn't even one of the people that I never went online and complained about it. So it's like you have all the people who complain about it who probably do buy it anyways, and then there's me who really won't buy it and doesn't even complain. I don't know. I didn't even think to complain because I didn't expect anything to change. And I already liked what the PS4 had already shown anyways, and either way, I know I'm probably not going to be able to afford either one at launch anyways, but it's just, I don't know, it's crazy.
In my opinion, and we can sort of end on this, with all of the stuff that is being revealed about the next gen and that they're doing this, they're doing that, they're changing things, and especially with the fact that apparently people who shout loud enough and long enough on the internet will get their way, I want to spend more time playing PC games in the future. I want to play games. There are so many games right now that are being funded by Kickstarter, by people who want to play these games, who can see the vision of what a developer has, and they can follow it all the way through development. And there's almost not a single game announced for current gen or next gen on consoles that can match my excitement for some of the things that people are getting on Kickstarter. I mean, like Wasteland 2, they've got the new Divinity game. I'm in the beta for that Card Hunter, which is fantastic. I mean, the Dead Linger Alpha, it's in Alpha, and I am already so excited about it. There's stuff that is going on in the PC space that just blows consoles out of the water, and I don't know. As consoles try to figure out how can we get people to, you know, not do the used games thing, what do we do with DRM? I mean, PC has already got it locked down, and they're doing things that are more exciting, usually for cheaper. And they're just paying for it using the money of the people who want to buy their games already. I find it hard to believe that PC is not the future of games. How ironic is that? Just a few years ago, you would see every other week an article was on the internet, is PC gaming dead? And now I think PC is far more exciting than anything going on in consoles.
Yeah, it is very, you know, like back when they said PC gaming was dead, it's just, I never actually believed that, but it was crazy that, you know, it was only a couple of years ago, and now it's like just exploded. And you know, I think, you know, and then there's also been arguments that people like are trying to say that maybe this will be the last console cycle and there won't be any more consoles. But I mean, PCs, I feel like, are still complicated enough where there's always going to be an audience for a console, because it's just, you plug it in, you put in the disc, and it works, you know. Whereas like with PCs, you got to make sure that you have the right specs and everything, and there are a lot of people who don't want to deal with all that technology stuff. But so I don't know if I could really say that console gaming is going to die. I'd be surprised if it did, but you never know what's going to be in the future. I mean, I have to say I am very jealous of all the people who can afford those really nice big gaming rig PCs and nice big monitors and can play whatever game they want in the highest setting. It's a dream that I'll reach someday.
One thing that I want to mention before we end out here is that it sort of slipped under the radar for some people, but at Apple's most recent event thing, they announced that in the new, I think it's iOS 7, there's basically going to be some sort of native support built in for, like, game controllers, which is something they had resisted for a long time. And if they could release the next generation of iPad with a controller in the box, I know that they probably won't, but if they did, put a controller in the box, just make it look like the DualShock or whatever, so that everyone has it. You can't have it be a peripheral that some people just have to buy because developers don't want to make games for something that maybe not everyone's going to own. It has to be in there. But the iPads now can run games that are like almost console quality. There are games coming out like Deus Ex The Fall that looks nearly as good as Human Revolution. It has the exact same gameplay and you're just playing it on a touch screen. I've heard it's going to be like 6 to 8 hours long. It's like a real Deus Ex experience. Throw a controller in that box and let people use the controls that they are used to, that they want to use. And I can almost see like iPad coming out of nowhere and becoming the console and PC that people want to play their games on. It's portable. You just put it in your bag. You bring the controller along. You can play console quality games anywhere on a screen that's plenty large enough. I mean, it would be crazy. That would be my favorite one. I could play a game anywhere on a 10-inch screen that looks, I mean, that Deus Ex game is coming. XCOM, which is one of my favorite games last year, just launched today. I hear that works just great, even with just the touch screen. I mean, it could be amazing. If they would just make the one right decision they could sweep in here and take 90% of the marbles. I feel like people just have to get over their hatred of Apple and look at this for what it is, which is, in my opinion, a gaming device and a pretty good one.
Yeah, that'll be really interesting if they do that. Like you said, it's doubtful, but we can hope. We can pray.
All right, and on that note, I think we are done for this week. Thank you for joining me here.
Oh, not a problem at all.
People, remember, can email the show at podcast@gamesreviews.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Joe_Ryan150. Do you want people following you? Share your Twitter if you're interested.
Sure. It's Allie, A-L-L-I, 893. So go ahead and follow me if you want.
All right. Let us hear your hate mail or whatever. Follow us on Twitter. Stalk us. Whatever you want to do. Until next week, we are out.
See ya.